I got it.
I don't think I saw you at the last
meeting. How you doing?
Hi.
Good to see you.
You too.
Mr. Beers?
Thank you. Thank you, members of the committee. I understand it is a evaluation of Dr. Erzer's performance committee meeting, so I thought I would drop by as I watched keenly for about 5 years. As in my opinion, Dr. Erzer and the team he's recruited have turned this place around. I know restaurant operators who told me when I got elected that one of the biggest problems in their lives is they were convinced that environmental health was starting their week off with a, all right, kids, go out and find $500 a day. And foodborne illness was a secondary consideration. That's how the restaurant owners felt. I'll give you an anecdote. This from a fellow who used to be the majority leader of the assembly. His wife is in the restaurant business, and I asked him how it was going. He says, well, these guys are terrible, they're really terrible, blah, blah, blah. I'm used to hearing that answer. He says, but you know what? The last one came in, and she said, where's your sign warning pregnant women about the dangers of drinking alcohol in our newly expanded area? And he said, I assumed the fetal position in the corner, waiting for the rain of blows. I looked up, and there was nobody. She wasn't even in the restaurant. And then she walked in and said, see, it looks like this. Why don't you take this one? That addresses foodborne illness. To me, that was the really exciting part of what's happened here in the last 5 years. The accountant in me, of course, deeply appreciates the fact that we got in this building. Remarkably risky move for government to pay X for a building and plan to pay 2X to bring it up to useful state is very risky, and it got done pretty much on time, pretty much on budget. So as a citizen, I wanted to thank you personally and commend the district for the great things that it's now doing. And with that, I'm gonna go back to work.
Thank you very much.
I got
much.
More battles out there. I gotta come in as the accountant now that they're done and stab the wounded.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Does someone join the line?
Yes, Frank Temmick.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the line?
Could this be the chair for public comment here?
That should be the chair for public comment because the microphone is right there.
Yeah, it's a good spot.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Regina Ellis, SEIU. I'm reading a statement that we will submit for the record. Honorable members of the Chief Health Officer and the Annual Review Committee, on behalf of the employees at Southern Nevada Health District, represented by Service Employees International Union, Nevada Local 1107, we submit this letter for public record calling for the resignation of District Health Officer Dr. Joseph Erzer. It is with great concern that we write to the board, as our members have raised several issues about Dr. Iser's integrity, his ability to provide the necessary leadership to guide district operations and its employees, and his commitment to SNHD's mission and the public health of our community. SNHD mission: to assess, protect, and promote the health, the environment, and the well-being of Southern Nevada communities, residents, and visitors. As you review the district health officer's performance today, we are confident that you will view Dr. Iser's capabilities through the lens of SNHD's important mission to the community. Below, we have highlighted several issues that occurred or are occurring during Dr. Iser's tenure. Issues related to the public health and well-being of Southern Nevada communities. Kids Clinic closure. In September 2017, the Kids Clinic was officially closed, leaving even less services available to underserved community members and youth. Discussions, plans for future closures of numerous programs that serve and protect the community. Programs identified as being threatened, including, but are not limited to, the following: the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program and Family Planning Clinic, during a time when Las Vegas is experiencing a population increase within the 20 to 29 age demographic. The injury prevention program, which includes the annual drowning prevention campaign in Southern Nevada that has been in place since 1999, informing the community about drowning. Heart disease and stroke prevention program, highlighting large disparities related to heart disease and stroke among the Clark County African American population. The sexual health clinic staff reductions continue to restrict the number of walk-in services accepted for screening during a time when reported sexually transmitted diseases are on the rise within the community. Issues related to leadership and undermining the value of SNHD employees. Attempts to unilaterally change employee benefits without consultation and or following the protocol of the collective bargaining agreement, Dr. Iser made an attempt to change employee health benefits. Worker safety. Dr. Iser has demanded that nursing staff and or other staff drive the mobile van for immunizations to locations across the community without proper training. He has threatened employees with termination, despite this not being part of the regular job duties for those employees.
Ricky, Barlow.
Absenteeism. Dr. Iser's frequent lack of presence at board meetings, bargaining sessions, and in general as the leader of SNHD shows disrespect and a lack of commitment to the residents of Clark County. Lack of leadership and related human resources issues. Under Dr. Iser, grievances are being sent to arbitration, meaning that management and employees are not finding common ground. This is evidence of Dr. Iser's unwillingness to compromise on matters that we would previously agree upon. During recent contract negotiations, Dr. Iser's letter of opinion to the board implying SNHD's possible financial downturn if the tentative agreement secured between management and our members was approved demonstrates he deliberately tried to undermine the hard work of both his appointed bargaining team and the employees of SNHD. We strongly question if Dr. Iser can execute the duties and scope of district health officer. As referenced in this letter, we urge you to review Dr. Iser's work carefully and recommend that the Board of Health call for Dr. Iser's resignation. It is time for the district to find leadership that is committed to SNHD's mission to protect the public health and treating the district's employees with respect. The new leadership and the district's employees can then look forward to working hard together to protect the Southern Nevada visitors and community from public health threats. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Do you want to hand those to Jackie?
I don't recall seeing it before.
We'll give her one, too.
It's just for today. It's
Hi,
just for today.
This is Ricky Barlow. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Just so you know, we have not selected a chair. We just started with the public portion of it, public comment period, so that's what's going on at this point.
Thank you, Commissioner.
You're welcome.
Okay. So, Victoria Harding, SNHD and SEIU. I'm the chief steward here at SNHD. Just a little extra comments on that. I just filed today, just before I walked in here, my 11th grievance for this year, on top of the about 10 from last year that still need to be solved. These are all going to arbitration. I have not had a single grievance that has been solved. Anything that has been solved has gone back on, and we have to go back through the process to try and get anything done. That lack of problem-solving ability in this organization is crucial, because normally that's what a health district does. We solve problems. However, the grievances are not being solved because of Dr. Iser himself, because we have great conversation within our grievance meetings. They go back for approval, and Dr. Iser turns every one of them down. And I just want to say that once we did the tentative agreement for our contract, that month was a hell month for me, because instantly after that happened, they started the kids closure for the kids clinic. They also, Dr. Iser, despite the fact that the chronic health budget was already done. You pulled $200,000 away from them, despite the fact they gave back $200,000 at the end of the year, which was two positions. Deb Williams did a great job of pulling together $100,000, which saved one person's job. That second person lost their job. They're now over in my area. Injury prevention, drowning prevention is all gone, and I've seen the communications from Deb Williams to you imploring you about the needs of the community that were not being filled. And you know what? This went around the district, and everybody was worried about layoffs. In retaliation for signing the tentative agreement, this was all done before the employees were voting on the ratification. And because they ratified it, you then put out a letter on your final attempt to try and sabotage this contract. And that kind of stuff is what I see every day. And we can't have that. We can't live in fear here anymore. And to be honest with you, the worst thing was October 6th. I sat in an office with you, and you told me about after the shooting how horrible it was for you. How at 11 o'clock at night you got the call from Jeff Quinn, who's our public health preparedness manager, and how you took your phone and you put it on vibrate and you put it on your chest so that you could sleep and get any kind of updates that might happen. Well, I was up at till 2 o'clock in the morning till I finally made myself go asleep, wondering if my phone was ever gonna ring, because we can be deployed at any time. And nothing happened. I was here in Las Vegas. I don't know where you were, but I know that you weren't around and available. And what if that were a biological event that happened and our incident commander was not here? What if airplanes couldn't make it? You couldn't make it back here in time. We can't have a chief health officer who is not here, is not present, and cannot take care of us. And I wished you had already put in your resignation previously, but I have to call and ask you to please resign so that we can have peace and we can move on and be healthy. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
So my name is Lorraine Oliver, and I've been working at Southern Nevada Health District since 2001 as a public health nurse. Currently, I'm a Healthy Start nurse, which at the end of the day is still maternal child. Now, I was born in South Africa, and I did public health in South Africa. And when I came here, I noticed that everything that a public health clinic has was here. That is STDs, family planning, immunization, TB treatment, etc., etc. I don't think in living memory any of us, and I'm going to defer to people who may know this public health department longer than me, but in the time that I've here, I've never heard that any one of those services could or would be in jeopardy. But from everything I'm hearing now, it sounds like that has changed. So actually, since you folks have the ability to say who manages us and to say how we're managed, please consider for a minute what you think public health will look like when we have no family planning and when we have no STD clinics here. And if the goal at the end of the day is for us to become a federally qualified health clinic, go back and look in your areas and tell us, do you not already have enough of those in your areas? The other question I have, and I've proposed this at least two or three times while you new folks are here, and some of you maybe before, is do we need a pharmacy? Have we not enough pharmacies in the community? I want to take a moment to thank you for giving us a unanimous vote on our contract. When you did that, you restored the positiveness to us that as people who do this work and do it dedicated and maybe would have continued to do it regardless of money, that we actually do count. And I don't think that was the feeling we were getting as we went down the road. We sat in these negotiations and we saw some very interesting modes of behavior in those circumstances. I took your comments to heart, Mr. Coffin, when you said that sometimes Dr. Issa has to deliver a message that everybody doesn't necessarily want to hear. But it was only in our very last session that somebody from the other side said, we care how you folks feel. And in general, when we negotiated, each time we negotiated, we had the circumstance where both attorneys, and we had an attorney and Andy only towards the end from here, and then the outside attorney that they had hired, and our attorney from SEIU. Only after those gatherings were done and we made an action towards you folks, did anything shift the needle towards favoring us. So I ask you all as adults, how am I supposed to feel positive then when I know that unless somebody's going to come and crack a whip over Dr. Iser, that nothing's going to move? That's not the way to operate. The staff who will be driving those big buses that they never should have been even offered to drive were told by the management directly above them that they will not be doing that, that it's not part of their job description, that a driver will be hired, the driver will be trained, the driver will take down the heavy steps to actually operate the clinic so you can go in. And then that was changed. What was that conversation? What do you think the staff that was reassured that now I'm not going to try to kill people with the big bus, because actually I'm a nurse, I'm good at immunization, but what the heck am I doing driving this thing that's intimidating me, and I'm telling you ahead of time, why is that not a big concern? The safety of your staff, let alone the safety of the community that you're doing by having these people that are unqualified driving these buses. So it's simple things that make a difference. That very last day comment, after we sat in negotiations for 9 months, was finally the comment that made us say, hi, human, we care that you haven't had a raise. And really and truly, this is very little about money. And some of us are very close to retirement. But we feel very strongly that we don't want the young and up-and-coming people to have nothing to look forward to just because we didn't stand up for them. I thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Did someone else just join the phone? Or drop?
Hi, this is Steve Bentley on behalf of the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, thanks. Hold on, we're doing public comment.
How you guys doing? Laquan McDowell. That's L-E-Q-A-W-N, last name McDowell, M-C-D-O-W-E-L-L. Some of you may recognize me from the Southern Nevada Health District Public Health Advisory Board. I'm not here to speak on anybody's behalf but mine, as an average Joe taxpaying resident of this community. I sat and I listened to some of the people prior before me speaking, and I empathize with them. I really do. However, I've been in this community since 2004. And we all remember where we were in 2012 and 2011, okay? And I understand the position that Dr. Iser is in. And when you're heading a department such as this, you're gonna have some criticism that comes with the job, that comes with the territory. But you're also gonna have some congratulations as well, okay? Because back in 2012, we were headed toward a down spiral. And we all know it. For anybody that was here, we all know where we were back in 2012. Now, subsequent to Dr. Iser's taking of the helm, we are here in this building. We have a fully functioning, running Southern Nevada Health District. To me, as a taxpaying citizen, that means a lot. Okay, and this is strictly my opinion. I think you've done a good job as a citizen. You have done a great job, excuse me, okay? Because, and just on my interactions with you, you're always very nice, you're always very pleasant, anything I've ever needed or wanted. And this is not because I'm on the advisory board. This is just me as an average Joe citizen. You're always there for me, okay? I can't speak on behalf of everybody else that have issues with you. However, I don't have an issue with you. I think you've done a heck of a job, and I would like you guys personally to consider, if we want Dr. Iser to stay here as our chief health officer, to continue to compensate him appropriately so he wouldn't take his talents elsewhere. And let me put emphasis on, this is strictly my opinion. I'm not speaking on anybody but me as a tax-paying citizen. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Is there anyone on the phone who wants to make public comment?
Hi, this is Steve Medley. If I may go ahead.
Please go ahead.
I represent the Department of Homeland Security Office of Health Affairs on detail to Las Vegas and Los Angeles area. First, I'd like to apologize for not being there in person. I think it's worth noting that the department authorized travel funds for me to be there. Fortunately, above the authorizer probably worked to keep in control as a public health measure, got a hold of me, and I wasn't able to travel today. But just the fact that they authorized travel funds and a strict budget to be out there is notable. That being said, I heard the gentleman before me refer to 2012. I can tell you without any uncertainty that the efforts we had in Las Vegas prior to Dr. Eiser's arrival were dismal. As far as the programs that we have there, public safety measures, specifically the biological weapons detection, we were the black sheep in this jurisdiction throughout the entire country. It was so bad, the state health officer at the time eventually told me that if Southern Nevada Health District can't get their act together, I will withhold funds and we will take over the program ourselves so that we are able to protect the citizenry that we signed up to protect in our jobs. Dr. Eiser arriving, I can tell you 100% certain that we are now the gold star across the country for jurisdictions and how to operate public safety program that we manage. So much so that not only have we been able to expand the number of citizens that we protect under the program that I work for, but we've also been able to bring in a team with Nellis Air Force Base and special events that they have, with the gaming and resort industry, and with other response agencies that didn't have a relationship with the health district prior to Dr. Eiser's arrival. This collaborative spirit has also led to DHS choosing Las Vegas as a preferred testing site for emerging chemical and biological weapons technologies. And not to deploy them, but to detect them. Let me just go ahead and clear that now. That being said, I haven't heard, and sorry for my tardiness on the call. There was apparently a hiccup with the conference line when I called it earlier. But, well, no one is perfect. I guarantee no one's ever going to receive perfect marks on any effort. From my interaction, the Department of Homeland Security's interaction with Dr. Eiser, we could not ask for a better program champion and a better collaborator than what we have in him. And I will close there. Thank you.
Have you ever been to a board meeting, Mr. Medley? Have we ever seen you?
No, ma'am.
Yeah, kind of a hidden secret. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Medley. Anyone else want to give public comment? Anyone else on the phone? Then we'll move to the next item, which is the adoption of the October 19th, 2017 agenda. Can I hear a motion to adopt or not?
Move to adopt.
Do you need seconds?
Yes.
Second.
Any comments? So we do have two people on the phone, I believe, and the three of you here. Can I ask for a vote?
Aye.
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 Did you get everyone, Jackie? Okay. So the
I didn't hear Dr. Nemec. I only heard one.
Yeah.
Dr. Nemec, are you still on the phone?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Aye. Ricky Barlow, aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. Next item is report, discussion, action, and nomination for chair for the Chief Health Officer Annual Review Committee. And so I would take nominations from the floor.
I'd like to nominate Commissioner June Giuliani, please.
Are there any other nominations for chair of this committee today? given that, I don't know that we need to go to a vote.
We need a vote.
But can we have a vote from the phone first? Dr. Nemec, Mr. Barlow?
Ricky Barlow, aye for Commissioner Joan Chiliani.
Dr. Nemec?
Let's.
Yeah. Or sometimes they have to put on mute and it takes a while.
Yeah. Dr. Nemec, are you still on the phone? If you're on the phone, your phone is on mute.
Hi, sorry, I had to step away. This is Dr. Nemec.
So there's a nomination for chair of this committee, Commissioner June Chiliani. Do you vote aye?
It's okay.
Dr. Nemec, do you vote aye?
I'm sorry, who's been nominated?
Commissioner June Chiliani.
Okay, I say aye.
From the three of you?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll accept.
It's unanimous. Commissioner, can I turn the chair over to you for item two?
Item two is, we already did approval of minutes of the annual review committee. They should be enclosed. I don't believe anybody, Doug and I were the only two on the original one, and I was not here. I was out of the country or someplace for that meeting. But is there any questions on the minutes? Any changes?
Commissioner?
Yes.
Ricky Barlow. If you don't mind, I'm not sure if you're speaking into your microphone.
Let us move it a little bit. Thank you. We're shuffling it around. Is that better?
Yeah, it's sort of much static, so I wasn't sure what was going on. A lot of movement.
Let's try again. We'll test this again.
Okay, yeah, I hear you perfect.
Okay, good. The motion, or I'm asking for a motion right now to approve the minutes from the former September 23rd, 2015 annual review committee minutes.
Move to approve.
Dr. Nemec, so moved.
Been moved and seconded by Dr. Nemec and seconded by Mr. Devine. Any further discussion?
Ricky.
Those on the phone, please say aye.
Ricky Barlow, aye.
And those in the room?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Second area is receive and discuss CHO report of accomplishments and discuss proposed goals for the next review period. Dr. Iser, are you going to do that part?
Yes, please. So, again, it's a district. And so most of the work is not done by me. It's done by our very able employees, as I've said during every evaluation for every year in the past and have said many times during other meetings. I have the divisions give us suggestions of what they would like to see in here. Some of the things that I took out were just numbers. We've done so many inspections for solid waste or so on, which I'm sure is an accomplishment, but tried to limit it to the three divisions and administration. And I think our most significant recent positive in terms of our performance event, and I'd ask if, I'm not sure whether Dr. Johnson wants to comment on it, is the multi-agency coordination center and the medical surge area command effort that we stood up on Sunday night, Monday morning. And the involvement of the health district staff throughout the ensuing couple of weeks, and will continue to be involved in over the next several weeks. There are a bunch of, did you want to say something, Dr.
Sure,
Johnson?
It's
up to you.
Appropriate. Yeah, sure.
Why don't you come?
Hear the microphone. So
yeah,
I'll switch around.
You can sit over here.
Sure. What is this?
And by the way, you all will hear a more thorough report at the board meeting next Thursday that's on our agenda to report to you.
Yes.
So, Dr. Johnson?
Yes, I'll just give you sort of the 60-second version, but Mike Johnson, Director of Community Health here at the Southern Nevada Health District. Yeah, I must say that I know Dr. Iser was contacted Sunday evening as late as well as I was by our public health preparedness staff and emergency medical services staff, to alert us to this event. My public health preparedness staff were deployed to the MAC immediately and actually worked. We were running shifts of 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. Many of them, including Jeff Quinn, who's my manager of public health preparedness office, was down there at one point, I think, for a 22-hour stretch. We have, you know, several staff deployed since the 1 October event, as it's being referred to. My supervisor in vital statistics has been spending a significant amount of time with the coroner's office on helping to facilitate burial permits and death certificates for the victims of this this horrible incident. I've had some of my epidemiologists deployed to the coroner's office. I've personally sit on the steering committee for what was formerly known as the Family Assistance Center, which was located at the Convention Center and is now moving as of next Monday off of Pinto Lane, and it will be referred to as the Vegas Strong Resiliency Center. It's going to be providing the same services that the FAC did, including referral to medical and legal services, behavioral mental health coordination and deployment, reunification of families and so on. So we're staffing up and working with Chief Steinbeck and others on that. So we've been involved on multiple levels. I will say this, I've been here at the district a little over a year and a half now, and I was extremely impressed with my staff, with Dr. Iser, with everybody that has touched this and been involved in the district, and how people not only stepped up to do what they know how to do best, but it's a testament, particularly for the public health preparedness folks that run numerous exercises and drills throughout the year for all of us and in coordination with all the emergency responders in this community, of how well all those exercises paid off and people were able to step up and do what they needed to do. It continues to impress me, even with the steering committee and the folks that are on it. So I personally spent a lot of hours on this myself, and I'm very happy to. It's just great to see how this community has come together, and the Southern Nevada Health District staff have been a big piece of that. In fact, we just received an award the other evening for some of the efforts that we've had from City Hall and Henderson. So,
how many staff are now going to be at our resiliency center?
Well, it's being staffed up with about 10 staff. It will not be our staff. Those are primarily staff from social services.
That's what I thought, because it was Kevin Schiller from the county.
Kevin Schiller is on that steering committee. So it'll be primarily, they have mental health staff that are prepared to step in and do that. We're really a support agency with them. What we've been doing is gathering behavioral mental health resources in the community and coordinating that as sort of a resource catalog that can be, that the outreach position can then deploy to, whether it's hospitals, hotels, first responder organizations, families, whoever may need it.
So you bring in the people, or you locate the individuals that are qualified to do the counseling, is what you're
Absolutely.
Saying?
Absolutely.
So do you coordinate that with, because every group has their own?
Right. Every group, a lot of groups, the VA and others have launched things already. A lot of, you know, resorts have already done it. So we're coordinating with that. So we've been developing a resource list that we've vetted that will be, that the Vegas Strong Resiliency Center will use.
And we'll get more information
on this. I'll give you much more detail.
You'll have a presentation.
Overview at the Board of Health.
I also have a question.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
This, everybody has a division to run, so everybody fits into a great big board of names, duties, and so on, and emergencies. It's a very protocols-oriented, I suppose. Did we have sufficient protocol set up for this mass casualty event on Sunday night?
We did, and that was to my comment that I'm extremely impressed with how well this came off and how, you know, everybody knew their role. Everybody was able to hit the street running with this. It really is a testament to the protocols and policies that we have in place, and especially the exercises and drills of walking through active shooter drills and things like this that we have practiced, our staff have practiced.
Sometimes on a Sunday night, you're going to find yourself short-staffed. Makes sense, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Would you say that we satisfied the protocol that had been established by the board for emergencies like this?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
So in addition, we are continuing to get requests for possible involvement And I would prefer to have individual conversations rather than a public conversation about what some of those requests are because of the nature of those requests by the city in particular. And I believe it's coming through the MAC. So I prefer not to speak
perhaps
about those.
Explain for folks what the MAC is.
The MAC is the Multi-Agency Coordination Center. It's
so why
basically,
would that be confidential?
No, the request.
Why is the request confidential?
Because it hasn't been approved yet through the whole system. I'd be happy to talk to you about it, but not in public.
No, but you do that. Well, I'll get into that later.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Well, let me ask you this. We have a procedure where we discuss things in private, I suppose, because there are confidentiality things, or perhaps there is responses which must remain confidential, especially law enforcement and public health responses. Is that likely what we're facing here? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
All right, I see this.
That sounds different from what you just said, though. I thought you said because the city had not approved it yet, so
that's,
the council people have not approved something
that's
yet.
That's part
versus
of it. It's all part of it. I'd be happy to talk to you about it after this meeting. Very happy to.
And it sounds like the city will have to meet in confidence then
sounds
on
like
this.
I'm not sure. It's going through the system to get approved, and then once it's approved, I think I can talk about it publicly. So the other issues are in here. I think the most
thank
fun.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The most fun thing that I can say that has been good. It's public health. It's been on the first page, the second from the last one. We established a green room that allows us to do health educational kinds of activities. The PIO and I work on the dialogue that will be given, and sometimes I'm turned into a cartoon. Sometimes. I give a talk, and it's not just me, it's open to other people to do presentations, but we've done one on immunizations back to school, one on influenza, and a variety of other things. So again, I can't take credit for all of these. It's the staff that does almost everything that benefits the community related to the accomplishments on these three or four pages. We did have goals that were from 14 to 17, and those are the six on the first three pages. And then there are other things that are in the work at the bottom of page three that we are in the process of getting done, doing. So we need an electronic health records that has yet to be approved by the board. We need to move forward on that so that we can start the implementation of that. It'll be very many months before we can get it into place. We do have now a work ledger platform called One Solution, and Andy mentioned to me earlier today that we're about 90% involved, about 90% through of getting that implemented. We're essentially done with issues related to North Las Vegas in conversations with Councilman Black, and in particular the mayor, and what they would like to do. We want to work on developing improved clinical services and expanding clinical services where we can. And then within the next 2 years, we'll be working on another SEIU contract. So those are, and you can read through there any updates that we put in there related to those goals.
Could you talk about 1C? What is the Orchard Laboratory Information Management System?
Yeah, that's just the trade name, the brand name of a management system that we purchased and put into the laboratory that allows for electronic laboratory reporting. And then as everything else gets put into place, this will allow us to bill for our clinical services related to the clinical laboratory that they do for us.
Did we resolve the issue of the discussion of whether or not we sign up people for Medicaid eligibility in all of our different areas where we contact into people to make sure that we are?
I think you know, because I've had conversations with you. Richard and I had a conversation a year ago, and he assigned someone here to
right.
work with us, but they weren't able to.
2 days a week, I believe.
Well, it was more than that to begin with, Andy. Wasn't it 3 days a week? And
three
then it's gone down to 2 days a week because there it hasn't been the demand. But we do refer people when we find people. But we have as much as we can in here. It's interesting, as I think you know, in other states, It's delegated to the county to be able to sign up people for Medicaid, but it's not delegated to the counties here. If it was, I'm sure you and I would have an excellent working relationship in terms of signing people up. But it's the state that does all the signing up.
Could we, for the folks on the phone, just go around who's at the table, just so everybody knows? Dr. Iser's here. Annette?
Annette Brevin.
Dick Tomaso.
Tell they may not know who you are, because there's two of them. One's Brandon.
I represent the city of Mesquite.
On the board.
On the advisory board, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Bob?
I represent the city council, Bob Coffin. Las Vegas City Council, that is.
Chris G.
Doug Delpine, Business and Industry.
Thank you. Just so Frank and Ricky knew who was here. Okay, so do you have any other points you want to talk about at this point?
No, I think they're all in there. And you can read them at your leisure. I'm sure you already have, pending coming to this meeting.
Questions from anybody, or discussion or comments on the phone?
I have none. Frank.
Councilman Barlow?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Bob or Doug?
I've got a few things.
Okay, go ahead.
So we just received a lengthy list of accomplishments and all. Where do you consider some of the shortfalls that we've had? There are plenty of people out in the world that will tell you what your shortfalls are. I want to know what you think.
Sure. I think that there has been a thought that we don't have a vision for the district. I hope that you all know otherwise. I've been unable to convince the board in some of those situations about how that vision is appropriate for the health district and where that vision can take us, but I hope to continue those conversations. The relationship with the SEIU representatives has not been good, despite efforts by many of us, including in particular Mr. Glass and our previous health HR directors. That we've been unable to improve that relationship as much as what we would like. I think that that's countered a little bit by the fact that when we've done the two SHRM employee satisfaction surveys, that we have been above average and above the average for the SHRM database on both of those years, improving the second year over the first. I wish that I could be more out into the community as I am. You all see on my monthly reports some of my community meetings. Some of those are done by phone, some of them are done in person. I think I'm looking at Jackie, but I've got a meeting with the school district this Friday that we have every couple of months. We meet with the Fusion Center on routine occasions. We meet with a variety of partners, the city and county fire departments, for example. I wish I could do that more. I think that all, and with the Nevada State Medical Association, Dr. Nemec can probably attest to how important that is for a health district chief health officer to be able to interface with the medical association, the medical societies, and I am on their board. I do interface with them on their monthly meetings and on some of their subcommittees as well. In particular, the Public Health Commission and the Antibiotic Susceptibility Task Force that I co-lead for them. I wish that we could do more, but we can't given the resources that we have. I'm sure that there are a variety of other things, but those are some of the top issues that I wish that we could do more of. This is the bottom line. I wish we had more funds. If we had more funds, we wouldn't have to worry so much about programs when the grant funds go away. I wouldn't have had to worry so much about the most recent approval of the wage reopener. I wouldn't have to worry so much about the future of the district, but that's something that I worry about on a daily, weekly, monthly period. And have asked and will continue to ask the board to help me with some of those financial issues. I've done what I can with the legislature in most of those areas. I've done what I can with the statewide Congress folk, for example, Dina Titus, Ruben Kuhn, and others, with the two senators that we have. I meet with them when I can on an intermittent basis, and then meet with usually three of those seven folks, six folks, on an annual basis when I'm back at in D.C. for a meeting. And I wish I could do that more. I think that would be helpful to us. We are getting calls from them, and we give them information as appropriate, but I wish we could do a better job of that. And I think I've mentioned several times, I've been trying to work with CDC to get us to become what's called a directly funded city. Our financial woes wouldn't be over, but if I could convince them to do that, along with several other cities and counties that are trying to do the same thing with them, I would breathe a sigh of relief if we could do that. Then we would get the funds directly to us instead of going through the state.
Much more lengthy than I anticipated, but thank you. I've got three other quick questions.
Sure.
And they pertain to the statement from the first speaker and the letter that was delivered to us. And there's three of the bullet points here I just want to clarify in my own mind. The first one being the kids clinic closure. I know we touched upon this at the last board meeting. Could you refresh my memory that we may have closed the clinic, but as I recall, we're still serving the people that came there. Am I correct in that?
That's absolutely correct. We're serving the kids and the families who came in. Dr. Leguin is seeing those kids, I think, on a weekly basis. He's not here today. Oh, he is here today. Sorry, I didn't see you. You're seeing those patients formerly of the kids clinic on a weekly basis? Yes, you can come up. Do you mind me?
No.
Okay.
What about you? Doctor, it might be easier.
For me, again, Director of Clinical Services. No, what we're doing is we're seeing the refugee children on Fridays. We are getting the list from Catholic Charities, and we schedule them, and that's what we are doing.
So after we had our board meeting, there was some direction that was given, and some concerns were raised regarding the clinic and closing it. So you all just went ahead and did that anyway.
The clinic had already been closed.
But never with our knowledge or express support.
I can tell you I did talk to Chairwoman Kirkpatrick about that when we had a discussion about programs and funds going away.
That's not how policy should be made, talking with one board member, with no disrespect. So go ahead, you finish your questions. I'll fill in what I want later.
My other one is on the sexual health clinic. I'm sure as a lot of your staff know that's been a subject with me for the past several years. I wrote those reports and asked questions of people on kind of a regular basis because the increase in STDs is disturbing to me. I see in one of the reports from Dr. Eisler, we saw 13,326 clients. Are we really downsizing our staff and are we not able to serve? Because we do have, I'm going to call it an epidemic here in our valley.
Well, if I can actually add on to that, there's an epidemic nationwide with STDs, in particular gonorrhea, syphilis, and not necessarily HIV, but with the other two, and we are part of that epidemic.
And I understand that, but I live in Southern Nevada, so that's, you know, my concern right now is with being on this board.
Okay, ma'am.
Please.
Yeah, no, we are not downsizing the sexual health clinic. We actually, what we are doing is we are planning that clinic to go into a billing direction, and in order to do that, we need to have what is called qualified providers, meaning either physicians, nurse practitioners, or physician assistants. Those are the only groups that can bill medical visits. We are right now we hire a new nurse practitioner, like probably 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago he started. Today we had the commitment of another nurse practitioner that should be starting in November 6th. And we are still short of one physician there. So once we have those providers there, we will make the transition from the a full nursing service that we have today into a provider, what is called qualified provider status. But we haven't been decreasing any staffing from the clinic. If that's what you mean. What we have been doing is just doing the transition for bringing those providers, and that's what we're trying to achieve.
And in terms, if I may, in terms
and,
of...
And the numbers, actually, from last year and this year, I don't have that in front of me, but they are pretty much exactly the same in terms of customer seeing.
So the other issue...
Read the reports then.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have that in front of me, but I could...
Well, if the numbers are the same, though, then we're not taking care of the price problem that we have. So we're under, we just maintain the status quo, and we think that's good enough?
No, that's not what I'm saying. But actually, in order to have increased services, then we need to have more funding to increase the staffing all over the system. But again, we also, as an organization, we will not survive with the current system we have. We are not billing in our clinics, and that actually adds to the deficit, financial deficit of the organization. So what we're trying to do is modify the nursing base clinical system into a what is called qualified provider based system, so we can bill for the services, and we are still providing the services. We are also giving the nurses, so by bringing those the practitioners there or physicians, we are not excluding the nurses from the services, but we need to have those providers there so we can also, the nurses will see what is called established clients, so that the nurses, once we start billing in the clinic, all new clients must be seen by those providers. The nurses can see the follow-ups, what is called a established client, then the clinic will be able to fully bill for the services. That's something that we don't have right now.
So for the billing is the ultimate goal versus whether or not it's convenient for people? Because where are the clinics located now that are, because if you're going to have a provider network, then you have to have an expectation that people can get to them, and then what are we charging for that billing? Is it the fee schedule we adopted as a board 2 weeks ago? I'm just trying to understand, are we in the willingness to try to be able to bill, are we then pushing people out or making it much more difficult for them to be able to access,
not
especially
really.
In the area of STDs, which were one of the highest.
Well, not really. Actually, the initial question was not about that. This is a completely different question. This is, you're asking me now whether people could be able to receive the services. And the answer is yes. We are not excluding anybody. What we are discussing just through all this implementation is once we, because we haven't started the billing in the clinic, so the clinic is working now as always has been working. Now, once we start the billing, we also are discussing a system of first having a sliding scale fee for the clinic that we don't have now, also having a policy that is called a hardship policy, so individuals who cannot afford to pay even $1, still they will receive the service, but they will have to qualify for that.
For everybody's information, where is the clinic located now? So everybody understands where that's at.
The clinic is here at this building.
Correct, they got to still, right? And you're moving into a qualified provider network? Is that in order to bill? So you're asking nurses and doctors out in the field?
No.
Okay,
no,
then maybe
no.
I'm misunderstanding.
Yeah. Probably, yes. No. No, the clinic, the clinic is not, is the same location that have been always. And now if we're talking about having additional location, again, that's a new question. Mm-hmm. But the clinic is located where it always has been. So we're moving the clinic from where it is. What we're doing is restructuring the way the clinic works. That's what we're doing. So we are, you want to call that re-engineering the system. We are, instead of having only nurses delivering the system at the clinic, we want to have providers who can build so we can recover some of the revenue from those.
So our staff will no longer be doing it. It will be providers that you are trying to contract with.
It will be a combination of providers and nurses.
But they will be our, the two APRNs that he mentioned hiring are our APRNs.
And how many do we have now?
Right now we have one at the clinic. We have a new one that will start in November 6th. And that will put us very close to where we need, because we need one more to be able to fully implement the billing there at the clinic. We cannot start billing in the clinic without the same provider.
We have tried to recruit for physician's assistants, but we can't afford them. And we have tried to recruit for physicians, but we have not found the right physician in the people who have applied to us.
So how many nurses did you have previously?
Just in the STD clinic?
I believe like a six, seven nurses.
Six or seven. Yeah. So we're down to 1.5.
Who said 1.5?
Well, you said you have one, and you have one that starts November.
No.
That's
no,
an APRN.
Nurse practitioner, okay, this is different, okay. You have the RN, which is the regular nurses that we see all over.
Right.
And then you have what is called nurse practitioners.
Right.
Those are not, so when I say we have one nurse practitioner, I'm not talking about the nurses in general.
Okay, so how many nurses do we have?
I believe we have now 4 nurses in the clinic.
And 6 to 7 nurse practitioners.
No, and 2 nurse practitioners. One that is fully dedicated to sexual health, and another who chair sexual health and HIV services.
And so 2 years ago, let's just say, how many nurses did you have and how many nurse practitioners?
I don't know about 2 years ago right now, but I can tell you back in January, actually, I don't have to go that far, we have a physician there, and we have two nurse practitioners. We lost the physician and the nurse practitioner, so we only had one nurse practitioner there until recently that we were able to bring a new one.
And why did the physician leave?
Well, she decided to leave.
Okay, so
she decided that somebody would pay more to her, I guess, and she decided to leave.
She went to UNLV.
Okay. I'm just trying to find out if we do exit interviews or something to find out so we know what
we do.
May have been a barrier or something along those lines.
Well, she said that they approached her and they make her a really nice offer. And signing bonus and some of that.
Okay.
So if the answer isn't complete yet. The other part of the answer is, what are we doing about the epidemic? We can't see every single patient that we have. How many cases, Mike? 10,000 chlamydia cases. We can't see hardly any of those. So what we do have, and what I have increased over the last 2 years, were the disease investigators, and that's the piece that I think is more important to you. These are the people who do the investigations and follow up and try to find partners to treat them and to find people out in the community.
So instead of treating people, we just go look and investigate.
Well, then we.
Just trying to understand what.
Okay. Well, I mean this. I mean the public health. The main priority in public health is prevention. So investigation is a critical component of that.
I'm not saying it isn't, but when we know we have 10,000 patients out there, why can't we figure out a way or at least have a discussion with us on what we could do to try to prevent the epidemic?
I'm trying to answer your question. There are also other providers in the community that see those patients. Now, the sexual health clinic here in this community is an important component of that treatment force, if you wish, but still, prevention is the main and critical task for the public health agencies.
In some cases, absolutely. In some cases, you need parallel, in my opinion. But that's when we see flat numbers for 2 years, so and feel somewhat satisfactory that we haven't made any gains in really dealing with an epidemic. Then I'm kind of bothered by that. But I don't want to continue with this line of questioning for now. Doug, do you have others?
Yeah, just real quick, and I just want to say, actually, I don't believe they're flat. And like I said, I'm pretty good at math, so.
Well, he said They're stayed about the same for the last 2 years, so.
Like I said, maybe my math's off, but I do pretty good math. The other last thing I want to bring up on the first thing, and only because it made our public media, was the absenteeism. And the comment here was lack of presence at board meetings, bargaining sessions, and in general, so on. Any comment back on that?
Sure. Because
to me, that's disturbing. I don't recall many board meetings you weren't there, but I'm known to be wrong.
I wasn't here for one this year, and that one was the one that I told Marilyn the month before that I couldn't be there. So I've only missed one board meeting this year. The chief health officer, and I'll have to look at Annette, has not been directly involved in negotiations, certainly weren't 3.5 years ago, and not this year either. So the chief health officer isn't directly one of the people who negotiate. It's the generally it's the division directors, HR director, and primarily Andy.
Yeah. And I'm done with questions, but I have brief comments. Where I see the biggest area that needs improvement is, well, I shouldn't say the biggest, but one of the ones that's bothered me is the relationship with the union. This has not been a pleasant relationship for the past several years. I'm hoping that we can figure out a way to move forward. It takes both sides to move forward. And I hope that you as the chief health officer and the people from the union could sit down and come to some agreement or whatever it is so we can start, you know, moving forward and being a little more positive. And the last thing is change is never easy. I remember before you got here, we had some difficulties in the district. Maybe put it mildly, but I do know in private industry, every time we come in, we make change management, change how things run. It's always difficult for people, and some people aren't happy, some people are not. But unfortunately, it's just a fact of life. But overall, I've been pleased personally with what you've done. I look at, and I'm going to use the example of environmental health, just because I'm most familiar with that. I remember for many meetings, we sat there and listened to complaint, to complaint, to complaint about the environmental health. And it's been a long time since I've heard one. And to me, that says we took a problem, we've worked through it, and we're moving on to something else now. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you. I come into this still as a greenhorn on the committee, having been on the whole board, having just been appointed a couple of months ago. So, and this is my first meeting with the CHO committee. I think that if I come into this just with an open slate and speak for what I know, I go and look and see, well, what don't I know? So I go back and I look at the minutes from last year's meeting. Now, this is a board meeting, not the I take it back. Are these the minutes of the board meeting that
this
was sent
to us? This is the meeting of the last CHO evaluation committee.
Okay, yeah.
Meeting a year ago.
Okay. Did the board adopt the report of the CHO review committee?
Yes.
We did. We had discussion because I argued against some of the salary part of it, but I don't have those minutes here. There was discussion, though, about it.
But it was passed and passed unanimously? Or any dissenting votes?
I don't remember that.
I don't know if it was passed, but it was passed. It was I think there were some no votes.
So the I don't see the minutes of that board meeting. So I am looking at this meeting here, the committee, which tells me a lot about what might have happened at the board meeting. But if it accurately reflects what happened, it appears that there was some friction. You can see it. You read about it. You don't have to see it verbatim, but there was some friction with employees. And I think that Chairman Beers, who I've kept up with very closely because we're colleagues until 2 months ago, we've kind of kept in touch about this assignment of his because he was so fascinated with it. He felt that his 5 years were really profitable spending here. He is a problem solver if there ever was one, and he usually makes problems so that he can solve them too. That's his
history.
That's
a good analogy.
Is he still here?
No, he's not.
Chicken. However, I've served in elective office for 35 years, and I've balanced and voted for and argued about budgets over and over and over again. They all come to money. Money is policy. Money is policy. If you have it, you can create great policy. If you don't have it, you can't execute the policy you would want to do. You can't have your wish list. You can't have just about anything. And Having already left the legislature, well, I was leaving the legislature at the time of the start of the Great Recession, I thought we did not see this coming, because we had the legislature before, and Chris and I served together before we served. We were prepared for most recessions. We were prepared because our tax structure is horrible, and I talked about that a lot. Yours is gone, our South African talent. It was inconceivable that the tax system we inherited could cope with what happened. And what it means is that you're stuck with a fixed cost, and you're stuck with fixed revenue. You can't really adjust your revenue like you can in business and take the hit competitively. Here, you can't take the hit in revenue and raise your price because it's regulated. And so you run short on money. The property tax stays the same regardless. And you have to hope that sales of various things happen. So if they don't, as they did not for at least 5 years, maybe six, and we're still kind of still in it, you can't satisfy the needs of the community. But that does not fall on any employee's shoulders. It is a fact of life that we've had to learn to live with. And of course, now I'm in my seventh year in local government, so I'm more painfully aware of it. This is local government here, what we're doing. And so I listened carefully to all the testimony at the meetings before regarding pay, employees, grievances, and some of them no doubt are legitimate. That there is no question. Now, those happen. They happen in any organization with so many people. But a lot of those problems could have been solved with more money. We create a steward, this board creates a steward, a CHO, who is responsible for creating a budget and responsible for balancing that budget, or our necks are on the line. So he has done that. Now, how he did it is always subject to argument. I mean, if he had more money, and we had more money, we would definitely be able to meet all the needs, but we don't. And of course, disasters come along like 1 October, where we're gonna feel that in our budget somewhere. We just haven't seen the numbers yet. So faults are there in any administration. I don't see, though, that these are exceptional. We have an experienced person, and he is compensated well for his job. I think he's capable of keeping and doing a good job. I think that the fact that last year you donated your salary increase, Dr. Iser, but you did receive a 15% one-time bonus.
No, I never
received that. We voted against that.
So that was not passed by
No, that was not passed.
Okay.
2.5%.
The minutes reflect that the chair's motion was seconded by Woodbury and carried unanimously.
In the committee, but not at the full board.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. So you've been in the barrel before, Dr. Iser. It hasn't always been pretty, but you've survived. And I think you're more than a survivor. I think you're a valuable employee. Paula, I think so. Now, I look at Chair Beers, and he noted in the minutes from last year, this committee, that he read the entire results of the employee satisfaction survey, and there are opportunities for further improvement. We're gonna have to say that again, I think, as my short time here as a witness. We're gonna have to say that again.
I would agree with that.
And understanding that a lot of the beefs are about money, but a lot of them are about workplace and maybe assignment of mission or completion of mission in certain areas. Again, I'm new to this, but I sense that the problems are fixable, and I do not think a change in leadership is necessary to fix the problems. We have to use our experience to help solve these problems, and not just change leaders, not just change direction. And I suppose that's up to you, Doctor, if you continue in this job, that you're going to have to pledge to do more in that regard. So, trying to keep it from going too long, but
okay. No, that's
generally
fine.
Speaking, that's how it was.
That's why I waited my piece. All right,
well,
thank
you. Two other members, if you want them to go
first.
I had
asked them earlier. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
Yes,
I didn't hear.
Thank you. So this is Chris, and I'm going to do a little bit brief of review of history. I said, besides Frank, I've been on this board 11 years. I've been through four directors, I believe, at this point. And I want to do a little bit of history. When Dr. Iser was first hired, the committee did not recommend him. It was another gentleman who then decided not to take the position. And we had just changed the state law to allow the health district, at our request, to have a chief health officer and an administrator, so that you actually had one that ran the day-to-day and let the public health officer be the overseer and the worker of the mission, which was the right thing to do. But the board at that time said, well, we got a second person, we'll go ahead and take him, and not work that way. So Bob Beers, myself, and Mary Beth Scow did not, we voted against, with no disrespect, on the hiring of Dr. Iser, because they did not move into the direction where we thought legislatively they should have been moving. So for 5 years now, we've had this kind of dual role, which I think has caused some of the conflict, truthfully, within the department. Now, Bob was chair. I had been chair years ago. Marilyn's chair now. I respect Bob. I like him a lot. But some of where that change of attitude came in my opinion, was when one of his friend who has a restaurant that he was members in, and it had gotten written up by the health district, and then that got fixed. And then everything became very congenial, and it was okay because one individual's store had
been. This is not a personal session.
No, well.
And I don't think it should be.
It's a CHO, it's a public hearing, and that's the way it's going
to
be.
She's entitled to her opinion.
Is that right?
So after that, there were issues as far as the culture here in the department. And so it worked through. We've been ups and downs. I mean, we've had issues with environmental health. I think that's somewhat settled now, but we had to go through hell over that part of it. I still have, and Marilyn and I are actually meeting with minority restaurant owners because they still feel that they're being targeted and discriminated and challenged differently. I don't know if it's accurate or not, but that is the perception that's there. So that's been ongoing for quite some time. Within the Asian American, the Hispanic, and the African American community. There have been, I do believe, and you and I have had these conversations, that you've been very disrespectful to me as a woman, that you talked down to Marilyn and I. We've all three had these conversations in our offices with you, and I still feel that that you do not respect us in the same way that you do the others, and that's something you need to work on. It doesn't bother me per se, but when you're in management, you should be respectful of everybody, and I'm trying to be as a commissioner and a board member health. I am very concerned about this district. Public health is absolutely key to a community's well-being, and the number of grievances have gone up. There's been no effort to really work with people. I think that there's been threats and intimidation, or at least, it shocked me, Doctor, when you weren't here, and I'm not criticizing that you weren't here at that last meeting, but that you sent a letter to undermine what we were trying to all resolve as an entire board on the collective bargaining agreement, and it was just like one more little jab in the back of everybody instead of just being manly and saying, you know what, thank you, let's move on. I think that would have just set such a tone, and you wouldn't give up, and it was just not, in my mind, appropriate. This is my position. In addition to that, you did go lobby with a bill to create the health lab without the permission of this board of directors, and we had to spend some time killing that bill. And I don't stand, that never stands well with me when someone goes and does legislation without the board's approval, so I have concerns with that part of it. You alluded to the issue of him living here. I have actual photographs, and I've actually witnessed you. We were on the same flight together one time. I don't believe you work here full time, and I don't think we have the same dedication. And I'm not just talking about the TV issues. I had people that were on an airplane recently, the last three times with you during the middle of the work week. Now, I know you still have an office in California. I don't know if you practice out of it or not, but you do have a residence there. And, you know, at some point that has to be addressed because the press calls us, and I don't know how to respond to it. I've not done it publicly at a board meeting because I didn't think that was appropriate, but I do think we need to address that issue here. And I don't ever want to put your assistant at risk. If somebody turned around and asked her, do you close the door so you can show that he's out and turn on the light, or how many times does that happen? Because that could be a request that comes from the press at some time, and I don't think that bodes well for the department no matter what happens as far as that's concerned. So I am concerned about the kids' clinic closure, the teen clinic, the drowning, the heart stroke, the sexual health. It's like all the things that make the ingredient of a public health at the risk of or at the expense of accreditation, which is a nice thing, but accreditation takes people's time and money, and it wasn't really anything that fit in my opinion, over this period of time that let us get rid of the programs that really treat our families and our kids. I don't know at this point. I don't think you have a relationship with the state health department that you claim you do, because I know them pretty well. And I don't know that after, when we were dealing with the election of the chairwoman, that you did make a comment, and I think she confronted you on this, that if she was elected chair of this board, that you would resign. I think that is very disrespectful, not only to her, but to us as a board and as whole. We can agree to disagree. I have no problems with that. I'm pretty open about where I come from and where I'm not, and I don't mind being the only voice that says something. But that just added more layers of disrespect, and I don't know how we're going to become a healthy district. And I've been through so many CEOs and so many of these issues, and I know Frank has been as well from time to time. I do think you need to take a step back and decide whether or not you want to remain here.
May I respond?
Absolutely.
So there were allegations that you just repeated about closing down the drowning program and others. They're totally not true. We've not closed any of those programs down. Not a one. I figured that was something that Mr. Devine might ask me about, but he didn't. We haven't closed those programs down.
It's not just closure. No, it's not just closure. It is about the service that we're providing. Is there a reduction? Were there less people? Was this? You can still have something, but it's the skeleton that's left, and therefore it justifies getting rid of it because it's a skeleton that's left.
We haven't downsized those programs. Despite, I think it's Regina's allegations, we haven't downsized those. You can ask Mike. They're under his program. Is that true, that we have not downsized?
We reassigned one.
Mike.
Sorry.
Mike, come on up.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
we reassigned Mike Johnson, Director of Community Health. Reassigned one health educator from the Office of Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion to our Office of Epidemiology and Disease Surveillance. The reason for that was because, as has been mentioned at the board meetings, the large pitch grant, which chronic disease has held for, I think it's 3 years now, ended in September, and it was a significant grant. So there was substantial loss of funding. Now there has been additional grant awards over the last year and a half that have helped make up some of the difference for losing pitch, but not all of it. So the remaining deficit that we had, I really had a choice to either lay people off, or I had a choice to look for reassignments. Fortunately, I had a vacancy in disease surveillance, and Jessica Johnson is the individual who, the health educator that we transferred. She was heading up the injury prevention program, which included drownings, falls, and opioid prevention. So she's continuing to do opioid prevention in the EPI surveillance shop. We are continuing the drowning program within chronic disease. We're looking at other staff now that remain there and how they can step in to help with that role, because that has been, I don't know if it was Regina or whoever mentioned, it's been in place for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And we've developed great community partnerships, and so we don't want to see that go away. So that is in place, despite what rumors
it's have been. It's in place, people doing it as well. I guess that's, if that's the case, if there's that much of a disagreement, then something's wrong if people think that that's what's gone on.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, there's rumors that fly around here all the time that are not.
No, they do in the county. They do in the
cities. I'm sure they do, that are not based on
in my office.
On fact. And so people, you know, some people will start these, and I get these probably daily. So so I do my best to quickly refute them, if that's the case.
Do you talk to the people that think that that's what's true?
I do. In fact, I went.
And so where does the discussion come into play? And this is his evaluation, not yours. But I mean, just trying to understand. Because it leads to me that the culture here is sicker than it's been in a long time. I feel like I'm back to Dr. Sands days.
Yeah.
My style
is, you know, I meet with my managers every week, one-on-ones. Any kind of, you know, updates and normal issues that we deal with. Any kind of, you know, crises issues or change in programs, change in staff, we deal with. If there's any concern from the larger staff in that particular office, and I have 8 offices in my division, I will go over and talk with the staff as well. If they're concerned that they're being targeted, if they're concerned that this isn't fair, if they don't understand what's going on. And so I do my due diligence that way. I actually met one-on-one with Jessica to explain to her the reassignment, to talk with, I brought in both of my managers from each of those offices to talk, to bring, and so everybody had a voice.
And I appreciate it. So we're going to switch back over. Thank you very much. But I do still think there's a perception, and perception becomes a person's reality. And so something has not been fixed as far as that's concerned. So thank you very much.
Let me just add one quick thing, too, just since it relates to that shop, is there was also a comment about the heart disease and stroke program, that heart stroke is being discontinued. That's not being discontinued either. So we still have staff that will be working on that.
Well, thank you.
What happened with Jessica is that we got funding, was it through SEPTA? How did we get that funding, Mike, where Jessica was able to go and work full-time on opioid prevention?
It was from SEPTA.
From SEPTA. Yeah. And so that's an opportunity for her to strengthen her skills in that area, and where I think we as a district need greater involvement.
So let's go to your issues, which I raise, which is where you live, undermining the bargaining team, statement about Marilyn Kirkpatrick, disrespect of myself, and the issue of going kind of around the board on the legislative side.
Why don't you give me one of those and we'll go from there.
Go ahead. Start with whatever one you want.
There were so many. The undermining the bargaining unit?
Mm-hmm.
So may I disclose something that happened in closed session?
No.
So let me look at you. It seems like I've had discussions with the board about my concern at some point, and I've had individual discussions with the board about my concerns related to the decrease in end fund balance. That's happened on an individual basis.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Can I have 2 minutes, please?
Absolutely.
Let's go have your side.
Okay. And that the attorney's walking outside with Joe for a moment.
So are we temporarily in recess here?
Yeah, why don't we do a bathroom break if anybody needs to.
All right, I like that idea. I'm going to stand.
Welcome to